Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Exceeding BRC Expectations, Addressing the Human Element of Food Safety. My name is Chase and I'll be moderating today's session. I'd like to introduce today's speaker. First we have John Cocoli. John is a senior member of the BRC Global Standards team. He's responsible for the development and implementation of BRC standards across the Americas. He features over 25 years of technical management experience in the food industry and has held quality and production positions with companies such as Kraft, ConAgra, and Ecolab. John is an active member of both the GFSI and the Canadian Supply Chain Coalition working groups. Welcome, John, and thank you again for taking time to join us today. Our next presenter in today's session will be Ms. Laura Nelson. Laura is a Vice President of Business Development here at Alchemy and brings over 30 years of experience implementing food safety and quality control programs for processing, packaging, food service, and retail operations. Laura has worked with global retailers and manufacturers in the implementation of the food and workplace safety programs. Again, welcome John and Laura. Today, Laura will walk us through the results of the annual Global Food Safety Training Survey conducted by Alchemy, BRC, SQF, Camden BRI, and TSI. And John will cover the BRC expectations for food safety training, common audit mistakes, and the latest updates from the BRC. We will then discuss how these can be leveraged to see insights and build a strong food safety culture. With no further ado, I will hand it over to Laura to get us started. And again, thank you everyone for taking the time to join us this afternoon.
Thanks, Chase. I will be focusing on this thing called the 4th Annual Global Food Safety Training Survey. This industry data really reveals some valuable information on food safety culture, training practices, and opportunities to improve our food safety programs. The data really supports the fact that our industry is committed to food safety while identifying some gaps around behavioral change. So I'll close my presentation by sharing some proven approaches to closing those gaps for your consideration. So let's get started. Let's take a look at some of this data. I'm just wondering, and I wish we could have a conversation, I'm wondering if you've ever been in a position where you were asking for more training time and your manager came back and challenged you with, well, what are other people doing? Really, prior to the survey, we really didn't have a definitive response that could help plants like yourselves benchmark their training program with the global industry. We didn't have a good response for that. But to address that gap, Alchemy has worked with Camden BRI and partnered with BRC, SGS, SQF, and TSI to really develop this benchmarking tool. We've sent it over to 25,000 food industry sites worldwide. And you can see that the results from this survey, this year's survey, really represents the industry, various industry sectors very well. Additionally, you can see that we had good representation from across the globe. So that was really important to us, and we appreciate our partners in helping us achieve that. So we feel like this is a real good overview from the industry globally. For the fourth year in a row, the most important training goal selected by almost 80% of the respondents was improving food safety culture. And that was followed closely behind ensuring effective employee performance and producing safe, wholesome product. You know, it was only a short time ago that the concept of food safety culture was really largely undefined. And now we have books written about this important topic, we have ongoing research, we have training courses, we have audits, which John will share, and the list goes on. So we've come a long way in this area. I'd like to get all of you some feedback from each one of you. If you take a moment, what is your biggest challenge to developing a food safety culture? So is it your turnover? Retention problems, a lack of understanding around food safety culture? Is it lack of just general time and resources? Or maybe negative employee attitudes? What what are some of the biggest challenges? And if you could identify that, select all those that apply. And we can see lack of time and resources as our number one challenge, followed by looks like high turnover. So appreciate your responses on that. And you can see that the data from the survey kind of follows closely from all of you, what you're suggesting. Lack of resources is really part of what the headwinds in our trying to improve our food safety culture in our organizations. And lack of communication was up there. Negative employee attitudes was also one of the top respondents. Also, this multicultural workforce, as we continue to get a bigger mix, it's becoming more and more challenging to do the communication within the different languages and dialects, and so that's posing some challenges too. So quite a few challenges regarding that food safety culture. The good news is that food companies, managers, and executives around the world are agreeing that effective employee training can have a direct impact on food safety and product quality. In fact, the survey respondents noted that the top three benefits from effective training are improved product quality, improved food safety culture, and fewer food safety incidents. I think it's worth noting that there's other benefits, including higher productivity and lower employee turnover. So as you're looking to maybe get some leverage to work on your training, get some more resources, and you can maybe use some of these data points to assist you. It's amazing. The industry is doing a tremendous job in training on a number of broad food safety topics. GMPs is the big answer there, but certainly sanitation and cleaning, personal hygiene, food safety, you can see those there. Very comprehensive list, and the ones in orange are the ones that managers or supervisors are receiving training on. So a tremendous amount of training is being done on a variety of topics. When we ask the question, are you satisfied, somewhat satisfied, dissatisfied, or very dissatisfied with both the quantity and quality of your training, you can see that a large majority of folks are very satisfied or satisfied. I mean, I would say we're in pretty much a status quo. There is a number of folks that are maybe dissatisfied, smaller number very dissatisfied, but for the most part, people are thinking, you know, we're good to go, both in the quantity, the time we're spending, and the quality of that training. We do have some gaps, though. We asked the question, despite our efforts, we still have employees not following our food safety program on the plant floor. True or false? 62% of the respondents said that is true. So what we have is kind of a really disconnect between what we're trying to get them to learn and possibly what they're saying they learn from quizzes, and they're confirming that, to what's actually being done on the plant floor. So we've got a challenge in those behaviors, translating that learning into behaviors. I think it's important, you know, that question I asked, how much time are other people spending? Well, here's the answer. It's pretty varied. As you can see, there's a disparity in the amount of training in food safety that's being performed across the industry globally. And I think we can all draw some conclusions that if you're training less than 4 hours, you're going to get a certain amount of skill sets and behaviors, and if you're training greater than 35 hours on food safety, you may be receiving a different level of response and skill sets. So there is quite a bit of disparity, and I know people have found this information also useful for them. And then we asked in the survey, how are you applying training, food safety training, across your supply chain? And are you requiring it? Is it mandatory or not? Are you suggesting it? So some very interesting data, really looking at training expanding beyond our own four walls and ceilings to our suppliers, our raw material suppliers and our service suppliers, our equipment suppliers. So certainly expanding that out. There does seem to be some exposure on training requirements around temporary staff. And that continues to be a challenge, I think, for the industry, especially those that are dependent on seasonal workforces. And many companies are relying on their staffing agencies to provide that necessary training. So I think John will mention this as a deficiency that is uncovered in the audits. I'll let him expand on that, but it is a potential weak link that we maybe should take a look at. So with that, I will pass this over to John so he can provide you his perspective from the BRC angle.
Thank you very much, Laura, and good afternoon to everyone. Hopefully this is going to be informative. I'm always happy to work with Alchemy and Laura to do this type of presentation. And this was a unique one because of the results of the survey that Alchemy did and Camden did. It was focused around culture, connected with training, how those two relate. And what I wanted to do was pull in those two. And this day and age, you can't ignore one additional topic, and that's FSMA. It's related to both of them. It ties into both of them. And then how the BRC audit or BRC certification process is related to all three of those topics. So what I'm going to try to do is pull together culture, training, and the BRC and FSMA, and give you a picture of what we're seeing with BRC audits. I'm going to try to talk about how culture fits in the discussion, how FSMA ties into it, and then what we've seen. And then I really want to touch on, after that, a little bit of best in class, things that we've seen through audits or the evolution we're starting to see as these topics come together. So culture, huge topic, as Laura mentioned. I mean, we know food safety. We know food safety management systems. This is the work we've done, the things topics we've progressed through over the past few years, and probably the last 6 to 12, maybe a little bit longer months, we've seen food safety culture becoming a topic more and more, and it's coming from various directions. A lot of discussion around it. Certainly good culture, bad culture, people can recognize when they see it. They generally understand what it looks like. But the challenge has been, how do you measure it and how do you fix it? Culture previously had been very dependent on individuals, so you have a very dynamic leader and their culture is kind of developed or permeates through the organization and it follows that person. Culture was never something that we've looked at, such as food safety or HACCP, where it's measurable. It's something where we can see outcomes from, and it's something that we can do things to have an impact on. We're seeing that as a change. So when we see culture of the organization, we're going to focus on the food safety culture, food quality culture, the product integrity culture. It's developed when you approach it, especially through training and other topics, from various directions, and you come in using different mechanisms. So if you simply have every Friday, you have one hour in the morning, you have a printed sheet that you read out to everyone, that could be training, that could have some value, but it has very little impact on culture. It's very static, it's very one-dimensional. When people keep hearing very similar messages about how we protect the product integrity, how our consumers are important to us, how we're responsible for the health and well-being of our consumers, and the enjoyment of and how they enjoy our products, and you're hearing that from different people, from different levels, in different messages and different formats, that's when it starts to resonate. That's when people within our staff start to take it to heart and start to understand this is part of our DNA. This is how we behave, because this is the norm within the organization that I work at. Especially when it comes from all levels. You know, it could be anything from the Christmas banquet and the CEO stands up and just does two sentences about food safety or product integrity or protecting the consumer. They're hearing that message all the way down to those shop floor talks where we're reinforcing that on a continual level. So when you see it coming from different levels within the organization, when you hear similar but not identical messages, and when you see different methods to bring that training, to bring that messaging across. Every time we're providing information, every time we're providing messaging to our staff, our the people within our workforce, it's training. It's helping them develop. It could be skill set training, how to clean a specific piece of equipment, so a set of procedure or a specific procedure to follow to get a desired outcome, or it could be more of a cultural fit on why we do things, how we do things, why it's important to us, why we react in certain ways. The interesting part about training and culture, they drive each other. If you have a very poor food safety or very poor product integrity culture within the organization, training tends to be very poorly picked up. You have a very low uptake rate. You know, you're in the single digits or teens as uptake and resonance resonance rates as far as people that understand, believe, and utilize the training they've been given. If you have a very, very good culture, you're going to have a much higher rate because people are going to believe and understand what they're hearing. And vice versa, people that do a lot of training, that's a mechanism to enhance culture, to make it more positive, to make it more dynamic, to make it better. And as a result, the more training, so you see that, how they feed off each other. The more training you do, especially when you do it from different levels, different people, different messaging, different mechanisms, you're going to drive a better culture. The better culture you have within your organization, the more efficient and effective your training is going to be. So it becomes kind of a snowball effect as you get better and better and move forward in this. It's not something you say, okay, next week we're going to have a good culture, let's do some more training, and it's going to stick. It takes quite a long time. It takes true belief and commitment from senior leadership and from all the leadership within the organization. It does take time. As I said as well, that dynamic, when you have a very, culture is not only good. You can have a very bad food safety culture, product integrity culture. When you have those things, training is almost a waste of time. People just don't believe the message. They'll do it if they feel they're forced to, if they're threatened to, but it, as far as a desire to or making left alone, making the correct choice based on their training, it's unlikely to happen when you have a poor culture in the organization. So training culture, very closely tied. We are seeing, FSMA is one of the newest regulations we've seen globally. We see others moving in this direction. We see things like the Global Food Safety Initiative programs, and they're all starting to touch on culture. BRC has, just about 8 weeks ago, we launched a food safety culture excellence module that could be used to measure and assess from a number of different parameters the culture of an organization, point out strengths, point out weaknesses, and then from there you have it, at least you've got a measure, and now you can start your development plan on how to improve it. So it's coming into things. What we see in regulation is very, very limited but prescriptive elements that really help to build towards a culture. And one of those in particular is around the term of the preventative controls qualified individual. Everyone's familiar with that. You also remember within the preventative controls, there is simply the use of the term qualified individual. Now, both of those are important and they are different. They're not identical. A qualified individual essentially is someone who has who needs to be qualified to perform a task. It could be they know how to take the product temperature on receipt. It could be they know how to run a canning operation. It could be that they know how to do a pathogen test within the lab. But essentially, that expectation within FSMA to have qualified individuals and proof of qualified individuals. So this now we've got that training tie-in. So the training tie-in leads to qualification of individuals, which is required for any task that requires a certain amount of knowledge or skill. We know about the preventative controls qualified individual. That's much higher level. Now, the qualified individual essentially includes everyone. Everyone must be trained adequately. We see this both in BRC and it's within FSMA. They must be trained to the task they're doing and the expectations of the facility prior to starting work. And this does include temporary staff and agency staff. And back when Laura showed that one slide where training, only 60% of agency staff tends to be trained. Now, it doesn't matter whether the agency trains them up to your level or you do the training when the agency delivers them. Those people are coming on the facility. They need to understand their rules. Now, one-off people, contractors, one-time temporary staff, it may be a very limited amount of training because what you have the ability to do is balance supervision or oversight and training. someone, let's take contractor for an example, electrical contractor, if they're going to come in and be able to access the facility on their own, work on their own, do their own work, they're going to have to be trained up to at least the level of every other full-time employee. Then you don't need to have that supervision. If you're calling an electrical contractor for one day and they've never been there, you're probably not going to invest a whole lot of time in training. You'll give them the basics, but you will also accept the fact that they probably don't remember very much of it, and you're going to have to supervise them fairly strictly. So you have that ability to balance training and supervision as part of your control mechanism. One step further, so qualified individuals, you can almost say most people are qualified individuals to some degree or another. Qualified individuals who are responsible for critical control points really need to have a higher level training, obviously in the control of that system, whatever it is they're doing, and it's expected that they will have a competency assessment. So we're going to go move beyond, we're going to train people to we're going to train and we're going to verify that they understood the training. Verification provides a second step as well, don't forget. It verifies the training is functional. If you have a class, you train 20 people, two of them pass the training, chances are the training is ineffective, not the people are ineffective. So it wasn't matched to the needs of the people. So that's your initial assessment, but it's primarily there to verify that the people understood and are able to apply the training they received. Especially on CCP, qualified individuals, you're going to want to make sure you have a effectiveness and competency assessment program ongoing. Standard question we get asked when we're doing BRC audits, how often do people need to be retrained? And the answer is quite easily, whenever they need to be. How do you know when they need to be? Well, that's your assessment program. So we're going to train everyone on how to wash their hands. We're not going to have a test. We're not going to have an assessment rate afterwards. But once we introduce that training, we're probably going to have someone watch people enter the facility every shift for a week and make sure that people are doing it properly. So we are going to have a post-training effectiveness test. That's going to be documented. We always document these types of things. And then we're going to move forward and, you know, stretch it out. Maybe we'll now do it once a month, then once a quarter, then semi-annually. And as you realize the training has stuck, the initial training, you can expand your reassessment or your verification step until a point where it's now just routine. We're going to do it every quarter. If we see more than 10% of the people are no longer following it, that's when we need to trigger a retraining program. So that should be driving your retraining, not simply annual. Do it whether we need it or not. Let's make best use of our time. Again, that comes right back to culture. When we're doing training we need to do, giving people skills they need, they're going to receive it much better than simply, oh yeah, that's right, it's our monthly training session. We sit there, they tell us the same things, and you know, we don't really have to do it anyways because they don't check on us. Big step to go up to the preventative controls qualified individual. It is, I would say, within the FSMA, within the preventative controls, it's not clearly defined, but essentially you look at the responsibilities of this person. They're in charge of the food safety plan. Whether you call it HARPC, HACCP, food safety plan, they're in charge of that. They need to know how to develop, maintain, and challenge that type of program. So if I'm the senior management of a facility and I'm designating someone as a preventative control qualified individual, I'm going to make sure they are demonstrably competent at building and maintaining a food safety plan. The PCQI is also responsible for all validations. I'm going to make sure they're demonstrably competent at designing and managing validation studies. And I'm also going to be able to have some mechanism to demonstrate that they have competency in the technology and the category of the industry. So for a bakery, I want to be able to show that my PCQI understands the equipment, understands the technology, and understands bakery science. Those things are important, and that's kind of the file I'm going to build. If you think of it that way, when the inspector comes in, be it your BRC auditor or your FDA inspector, and they want to talk about PCQI, what you want to do is pull out the file. Here you go. Here's their food safety plan training or their FSPCA PCQI training. Here is their validation training. Here is the resume basically that shows their experience, level of competency, and understanding within the technology we have. Show it to them, that's done. One thing with FSMA, a little hint for everybody. You have to remember that people that are going to be assessing you, the inspectors that are coming in to assess your food safety plan and your adherence to preventative controls, probably know as much as you do. So my recommendation is to show them the way you've done it, the way, you know, essentially take pride. Same thing with the BRC audit. Don't wait to be audited, participate in it, show what a good job you've done, provide the evidence, and really demonstrate that. So we're going to throw a little poll on here. BRC auditors. And if you don't happen to be BRC audited, I'm sure you've been audited before. What's the nonconformity when it comes to training? What's the typical nonconformity, the main nonconformity you feel is observed by BRC auditors? It could be the consistent application of training. It could be documentation. It could be specifically HACCP training or proficiency in food safety fundamentals. And we'll call that a difference between HACCP and food safety fundamentals. If you'd like to answer that, I think we'll get the answers right away. Documentation. Well, there's not a surprise at all. That is something that we tend to see. I will say that in general from BRC audits, what we tend to find is training is fairly well done. It's something that's covered well. It's something that's managed well. Individually, within audits, we don't see a huge number of nonconformities. This is certainly not where our major issues tend to lie, as within training. In general, it's done fairly well. Just like you said, within the poll, and just like what was found in the survey, documentation gaps. Not missing entirely. It's just gaps, and it could be that one person who happened to be working on that spot because somebody was called in sick the day of the audit. We don't have a training record for them. Or it could be, you know, the agency staff. They took the training. We just haven't had a chance to do all the record keeping at this point. So it's really the management of the documentation. Generally, the training is done. What we tend to see is either individuals slip through the cracks, you don't have a good system that really oversees the training and makes sure that people that are assigned to positions get the training, or when their training time comes up, they get it, or simply assigning people to the wrong spots, things like that. Other area we see, the second most frequent nonconformity is very similar, but making sure it applies to everyone. 90% of the people, 95% of the people within the facility are well-trained, but geez, there's a contractor in doing some welding, and they're supposed to do the contractor training, sign in, log in, and wasn't done. So it's these little misses. It's the little slips in the program that tend to get you. And let's face it, those are the ones that are going to cause us a problem. It's pretty obvious you're not going to get up to a BRC certification standard without a good training program. But let's really focus on making sure those little slips don't happen, or little misses don't happen and kind of catch us on it. In general, CCP training, very well done. We're seeing that we've called the person in charge of the food safety team leader, who's going to be your PCQI for the most part, generally well trained. We are seeing a need probably for validation training within food safety team leaders and or your PCQI, that it's something, because of the added weight on validations, the added expectations about validations being true challenges to our systems, making sure that a good understanding of validation is there. So training in that topic is well done. CCP training, generally well done. It's that ongoing assessment. Part of it, either not having one or not having it formally documented that it was completed, or being a little too aggressive and saying we're going to do it every month. When, you know, you've got a pasteurizer operator who's worked there for 30 years, you probably don't need to do an assessment of their skills every month. But, you know, I mean, they are the most important person when it comes to food safety in the organization. Probably an assessment once a year would be valid. Or we're only we've got six people who can do temperatures on receipt, and we're only doing one a year. 6 years between assessing people is not very good. So we want to make sure our ongoing assessment, especially for those critical folks, is robust, catching everyone, and documented. So that's what we're seeing in the audits. And you can see that tie in now a little bit. Preventative controls qualified individual through FSMA. How culture really drives everything, and then in the next one, you're going to see how culture really comes to play. So these are things that we consider to be leading edge, world class, when it comes to that connection between training and the results through culture and through the organizational effectiveness. Again, right back to the first point of driving a culture, multiple mechanisms, adjusting it to fit the purpose, to fit the topic, and to fit the audience, gives variety, keeps up interest. You're not just drawing on the same thing or the same style, the same mechanism every time. So people who drive culture through training and people who get the most benefit out of training are those that really add variety to the training that's put in front of their employees. Part of that, you know, being, as I stated, fit to purpose, really understanding the particular workforce at play. What is their learning mechanism? What is their learning style? And understanding, again, that if you take a group of 20 people, you've got four different learning styles within there. And you have to be able to appeal to all of them enough. That's why we're going to approach it from with different styles and different methods. It's going to meet the needs of all of those different people. And also little things like language, like more, you know, more visual aspects for some, more documentation for others, more theory for others, depending on the topic and the audience. Some of the big changes, these last two. We've all heard the term the Internet of Things, right? Everything's connected. The fridge calls the store when you're out of milk and you get it delivered. You don't even have to be to intervene. We're starting to see that creep into some training programs and oversight programs. So, for example, I'm the supervisor on the second shift. Someone calls in sick. I need to assign someone to this the receiving position. I'm only allowed to assign or contact the person who's got an up-to-date qualification. Great step. That way you will never have someone in position where they're not qualified or you don't have the appropriate documentation for their qualification. Secondly, is kind of a preventative maintenance program for training. Rather than, okay, it's June, we have to train everybody, you have individual learning profiles identified within your organization and you're going to pop up, kind of get a preventative maintenance warning, say, you know, Bob's CCP training is due within the next month, please schedule and input the results so that you're getting these automated reminders. When it comes to training management, we don't want to spend our time with spreadsheets, inputting data, putting things in like that. That's really not where we're doing the best. We want to spend our time with the people doing the training and developing those that culture. We want to make sure that we have the systems in place that really drive that on its own. And then one of the big changes, and I think most people understand this and try to implement it, but those that do it well see a good benefit. Why? It's very easy to explain to someone how to clean something, how to take a temperature, how to do a test. When they understand the background, how this relates to my job, my customers, my company, how I play an integral role in the efficacy of the work I do, has a direct impact on the livelihood of, or the health and well-being of our consumers, makes a huge difference. And again, that's part of that cultural development, using training to drive culture to get a more consistent workforce and a more understanding workforce. I just wanted to throw it a little bit. I talked on a couple of them. I spoke about the Culture Excellence module. That's something that BRC has rolled out just a few weeks ago. It's available for certified sites to be able to have that first measure. It's a great little tool. Other topics that came out, I mentioned FSMA. We all know that within the GFSI standards, we're pretty darn close to preventative controls. None of us are perfect, so what we've done is we've made a module and guidance that you can tack onto your audit or you can just use on its own. That's free to download from BRC Bookshop. We have our retail standard. We've updated our storage and distribution standard. So for retailers, we have that ability now to get a VRC certification audit. And if anyone's interested in the Atchison report that we had done comparing our food standard to FSMA preventative controls, which was kind of the initiator of that module, that's on our website for free as well. So if you have any questions or more need for information to understand a little bit more of the why, you can find those things there. And I'm going to hand it back to Laura now to continue.
Thanks, John. Great information and some really good tools that are being developed to really help the industry bridge that audit certification and regulatory requirements. So fabulous job. I'm going to be building on that information. And John, there's your food safety culture module, which is huge. I know a lot of people kind of, I mean, obviously that's the number one goal, but how do you measure where you're at in your journey to improving your food safety culture? So that module of yours is going to come in handy for that. I'm gonna follow up in on several of the gaps that were identified with John, and I'm really leveraging the 10 years plus that we have to look at those common training gaps that can negatively impact your training effectiveness. You know, the reality is that what we may have that may have worked for us years ago simply isn't effective today. The demographics of our employees, John mentioned this, have changed. Our operations are becoming increasingly more complex. We have more regulations and customer expectations, and we have more product exposure with the proliferant social media. So because we may not have updated our training to reflect some of those changes, we may be experiencing some gaps that translate into non-compliant employee behaviors. So oftentimes we may not include that why. John talked about that. That's hugely important. And many of us have not found some good metrics to measure effective training. Typically, food safety is led by QA and QC, probably all of you on the call today. And we really struggle with finding the time and resources for reinforcement of food safety training and validating those behaviors, as John, you mentioned. So let's take a look at this. I just included this image from the standards course, the BRC standards course that we developed with BRC. And this came from as a request by our customers to help their frontline employees really understand this thing called BRC certification. What is this, and why is it every role, every employee's role to be a part of that food safety program? It goes beyond that auditor asking that question. And so we helped develop with John and his team this course to really illustrate that connectiveness of the food industry. And some of these concepts, I think, are things that we maybe as professionals take for granted, but our employees don't necessarily know that, right? They're here and now is you know, coming in every day and going to their spot on the conveyor line and putting their head down and getting to work. And so that the big picture may be missing. So I just encourage all of you to take a look at your training and look at how you can illustrate the importance of certification or any of the key topics that you have in food safety and the implications beyond that, the real why. The other thing I mentioned is metrics, and a growing number of progressive companies are leveraging leading indicators, and we can see that as the number two here, employee performance, employee behaviors, to really ensure that their employees are not only retaining what they learned in the classroom, but they're also able to demonstrate those correct behaviors consistently and those habits on the plant floor. And what a great metric to see if they're actually getting what you're trying to, you know, share with them and educate them on and build those skills and that knowledge and making sure that it translates into those right behaviors. I think others are still relying on maybe product quality, so consumer complaints, oh, something was wrong, so we need to go back and look at, you know, maybe retraining or hopefully not withdrawals or recalls. And a number of different metrics that are maybe more lagging in indicators after the fact. So I think it's a challenge, but it's something that we probably could take a better look at is what are those indicators that we could be measuring that really shines a light on how well we're doing around training. The other thing I would say here is making sure that when you set those metrics that they're the metrics that are going to drive the right behaviors. I was talking to a large national organization, and they said, well, we're tracking training events. And what was happening, people were nailing the two events per month, per plant, and what was happening is the behaviors were starting to be less and less, and it really wasn't effective what they were doing. People were just kind of scrambling, trying to get their two training events done, and not looking at the end result, how effective that was. So as you're looking at effective metrics, just make sure that you're trying to identify some of those leading indicators and that the metrics are driving the results you want. The other thing is this responsibility for food safety training, and the data really confirms that the quality control and quality assurance teams are largely responsible for food safety training. And I know many of you out there are saying, yeah, Laura, that's exactly right. We're the ones responsible for it. I think the challenge is this responsibility really translates into trying to vie for that rare employee training time between operations and HR and workplace safety teams, for example. So there's only so much training time allotted, and there's these challenges to get as much food safety training in as you would like. I think what we're seeing is that organizations are integrating all employee training into a unified learning strategy plan. So they're it's based on skills assessment across employees, so all skills, whether it's food safety or workplace safety, et cetera, behavioral performances and gaps, the current job task. Sometimes maybe it's old and we don't know all the current job tasks that's needed, and working together to really focus on those key learning topics and key learning gaps for those employees that really need to attain those consistent skills and behaviors. So it is a different approach, and certainly by this data, and it is something that people are finding to be proving helpful, so that that time is allotted appropriately based on the risk to the business. So definitely something to take a look at. And the other thing is expanding our training definition. I think for many of us, training is that classroom training, and we're going to give that PowerPoint, and we're going to get everybody back out on the shop floor. This refresher training is really an emerging area of research on modifying behaviors. And most people are familiar with the concept of the moving down the learning curve, but there's a corollary curve called the forgetting curve, which is the amount of training forgotten over time. And Dr. Cohen, who's from the Portland State University, shows that people really forget about 80% of their training within a week, or at least within 30 days. So it's important that we really recognize that classroom training in and of itself isn't the end all, and John made this point very well, in that you really need to look at if you're not seeing those behaviors that you want, that's what triggers some refresher training, or certainly some additional training. And we'll talk about how what that might look like in just a moment. So keeping in mind that I think we're going to have to be more creative in our training and education and what that looks like. And speaking of that, here's data from the survey that says, and what I have termed rolling thunder. So how do you keep training top of mind, food safety training? It's that rolling thunder, and John, you mentioned that. People are becoming really creative. They're using parts of those huddle meetings or team meetings to talk about key elements, just one or two sentences to get some dialogue and focus on that. They're using the posters and emails, digital signage, even paycheck stuffers. So there's people that are doing some really interesting things to keep that focus on food safety. Within Alchemy, we've worked with real closely with companies really to develop food safety and workplace safety communication campaigns that really focus on the common employee behavior deficiencies that an organization is seeing despite their classroom training. So we work to develop things like these huddle guides to communicate the important food safety messages. The huddle guides really have all the relevant safety information or food safety information on the employee side, so those important visuals, and it provides the key talking points and discussion starters on that supervisor side, so that literally 5 minutes you can show that that poster and engage in a dialogue that really focuses and shows those employees that these topics are very important. And then you coordinate that with the posters and the digital signage and coach observations to validate those behaviors. And all of those are visually tied in, so these messages are reinforced throughout the workday without the need for that additional formal training time. So very powerful. Just as a little evidence of this, we developed some this campaign, this food safety campaign, for a retailer, food chain, and they were looking at how they can improve their food safety audit scores. And so we worked at identifying those gaps, and we created this weekly and monthly campaign. You can see in the blue, that was when the campaign was going on. Week number 9, they had a little challenge, and they said, you know what, we're going to have to stop the campaign. We're going to have to retrench, dollar watching some dollars. And so, but they kept measuring the audit scores, and what they saw is that a pretty dramatic drop in the audit scores when these messages, these reminders and awareness was not there. So at week 19, they said, gosh, we definitely need this campaign. We've got to have this reinforcement. So we reinstated that, and you can see the audit scores going up, and this is their data. So very interesting, and obviously, this awareness concept, this rolling thunder, is proven to work. You know, at Alchemy, we believe in unlocking the potential of your frontline workforce. We're clear that your employees are involved in basically every aspect of your operations. So they are your biggest asset in keeping your product safe. This approach to behavior optimization really involves consistently teaching those employees the correct behavior, reinforcing that information through these communications, these different tools, posters, or little mini modules, etc. And then making sure we are observing and coaching those employees on the production floor to ensure that they're retaining that information and exhibiting those correct behaviors. And what we know, and you do too, that knowledgeable, confident employees who clearly understand their role in food safety really translate into reduced food safety risk. So we encourage you to take a look at your training and see if there's some improvement or two you can make to drive more compliant employee behaviors. For those key food safety topics in your plant, have you covered the why behind those topics? Have you established the training metrics that you need, and are you reviewing that data regularly to help you periodically revise your training content and improve on it? Are you working alone on your food safety training? Are you trying to work across departments to really establish that comprehensive learning strategy for your entire organization? Have you trained your supervisors to be those effective coaches and provided them the time they need to actually do the coaching and reinforcement on appropriate food safety behaviors? Really, really a key element. A lot of research points to that. And have you expanded your training program beyond the classroom to continually communicate and reinforce these food safety topics? And a lot of companies are doing a fabulous job in doing that rolling thunder. So with that, I'll say good luck to each of you on the good work that you're doing every day, as demonstrated by the survey. And Chase, I'll turn it over to you for questions.
Well, terrific. Thank you for that, Laura. So first and foremost, I just want to take another moment to thank John and Laura for all of that wonderful information, and to the participants for submitting such great questions. So without any further ado, we'll jump straight into it. John, I'll direct this one first to you. When speaking about number of hours of training spent, was the calculation based on per week or per month or per quarter?
I believe that refers to the survey, and that would have been on an annual basis. So that's looking at the per person annual numbers of hours of training that were put forward. That was a nice easy one.
Let's see if we can't ratchet it up just a little bit. Laura, we have a question for you here. Since lack of resources is a challenge for the majority of food companies, what are some tips or suggestions in ways that you might overcome that?
Oh, that is ratcheted, Jace. And that's an excellent question, one that we hear a lot. The thing I would do is suggest that you definitely leverage this benchmarking tool. So if you find yourself below the average in some of these key areas, then I think you have the ability to use that data and go to your management team and say, look, we're a little behind the curve here. We have our industry folks are doing more than what we're doing either in what we're training or the time factors, et cetera. So that would be one thing. And also, are you using some of these other tools to drive home your food safety concepts? And if you're not, again, you can point out, look, people are being very innovative in some of the ways they're achieving some of these effective results from effective training is through these other mechanisms. And I think it's important to note that some of those things don't require time off of the plant floor. And I think that's where the biggest cost is when we try to pull those employees off into a classroom. So as they're walking by a poster in the break room, that's not time away. And so some of these are very cost effective, but still very effective. And then finally, I think if you do some work up front in metrics, in establishing those metrics, I mean, clearly we see the industry says there's a lot of positive benefit, high productivity. I mean, your management team and operations would love to improve productivity. Retention, we know it costs a lot of money for employees when they leave, and we have to recruit some more, and we have to retrain, and it's lower productivity. So there's a cost to all of that, and if we could prove that we can impact that positively through better training up front and maybe ongoing training, and maybe very specific training to address those gaps. That's, I think, with that kind of work and that kind of data, you might be able to garner some additional support.
Fantastic. So John, we got another question. We'll head your way.
Okay.
According to BRC Global Standards, who is the primary person responsible for training?
Ah, excellent question. In all reality, the primary person to ensure that a sufficient amount of training is performed and that the results are there would be senior management. And I'm going to bring my friend FSMA right back into this. There's one little section, and forgive me, I don't recall the clause number on it, but it speaks about the agent in charge. Agents in charge is PC language for site senior management. And essentially, from a FSMA standpoint, the agent in charge is the one who holds all the liability. In the BRC language, the management holds all the responsibility, which of course is tied to liability. They are ultimately responsible to ensure an adequate amount of training has been delivered to their staff and that it's been effective. So obviously it's generally not the site senior management who's doing the training, who's writing the training, who's managing it. They designate someone. And we've seen, you know, it depends on the organization, it depends on the size, it could be HR driven, it could be a food safety department, it could be production. You generally have all of the different departments working together on a single training matrix so that you're not going cross purposes to one another. So the delivery of the training, that's generally department by department. When it comes specifically to food safety, it's obviously the quality or production department, depending how you're organized. But responsibility and liability, the big two questions, that lies in site senior management. And I think, you know, the senior manager, the agent in charge of the facility, really has to start taking that seriously with what's come out through FSMA and understand where are we with training? As Laura mentioned, comparative to other organizations, are we in line with them? Are we way off? Are we way below? And then understand the results. So the, not just did we do training, did we hit our 500 hours of training or 20 hours per person of training this year, great, check it off. Tying the training into the results, and that's going to come through things like product quality measures, food safety risks, audit measures, training, overall training efficacy assessment programs, cultural assessments. You have to have an understanding. I would be very hesitant to simply say hit this number and life is good. It's the number is going to be different for different organizations, but you have to understand what do we want out of training. How do we measure that part? Let's not just measure how much training, let's measure what we got out of it and base our changes on that. So big long answer, but hopefully that covered it.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take time for just one more question, and you briefly touched on it, but I'm going to direct this one to Laura because we were talking about it a little bit earlier. You know, we talked about food safety culture, and so we talked about earlier in the presentation, if you have what is determined to be a bad food safety culture, training can sometimes seem ineffective. So Laura, where would you suggest that a company starts to start building as a first step a positive food safety culture where training is more impactful and really does drive change to the bottom line?
Great question. So, and John, I'll call you out for the, you know, the food safety culture assessment. Joanna Taylor from ITI has done a great job. Lone Jesperson has another assessment that's available. I believe getting a third-party assessment is one step that you can take now that it's available and really be able to, again, look at some kind of benchmark of where you are as compared to others. And there is a continuum. Food safety culture is a journey. The fact that you're in one particular spot, maybe you're in the reactive mode, firefighting and lots of things going on. You're not using technology. You're not using data. You're kind of new to this concept around food safety culture. That's not such a bad thing. But what should happen is if you recognize where you're at, and then you can start to say, what are those progressive steps that I need to move me into a more proactive approach where I'm utilizing data and I'm making effective change and I'm looking at continuous improvement and I'm really changing and optimizing those behaviors. And it's not overnight. So I think an assessment like BRC has and others offer is helpful to really put a stamp on that. And then what that does is it allows you to then identify, okay, my biggest gaps are in this area. And so maybe I need to improve on offer more language opportunities, more visuals, more, you know, again, leveraging data and using metrics. So I think understanding where you're at and is a start, and you can use those assessments that are available today.
Well, terrific. Thank you for that, Laura. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is about all the time that we have. Again, I would like to take a quick moment to thank John and Laura for all of that wonderful information. And it goes without saying thank you to everyone who joined and participated in today's session. We appreciate the questions and the feedback that we receive from you. Again, thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you at our next webinar in the very near future. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and take care.